This is Jim Zuris, podcast host and operator of SysRep, that's Senior Information Strategies for Real Estate Professionals. Today I'm with Gail Barnes, broker owner of Next Level Properties. Hello, Gail. How are you?
Hi, Jim. I'm great. Good to see you.
You too. Listeners to this are going to be real estate professionals who have either been all along working with the senior market or they're considering adding the senior market to their business plan. You've done a lot of work with the probate area. First of all, I'll give you a chance to introduce your brokership, what you do, and then maybe talk a little bit about area probate and how you do probate sales.
Excellent. Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me for this opportunity,
Jim. Welcome.
Probate's really important to my team and I because we know that 69% of the people who are homeowners don't have a will or a trust. And there's a lot of misconception out there, Jim, that people think that because they have a will that they won't have to go to probate if someone passes away. And there are several reasons, of course, why you should have your property in a trust. One, of course, to avoid probate. But then it's more than that, too. It also goes into, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, it also has to do with having conservatorship in place, health directives in place, because some people believe that death is the only reason why you go to probate. That's not true. Mm-hmm. There's also conservatorships that go through probate court. So we pride ourselves on being experts because we work with a lot of attorneys. We're endorsed by many attorneys, not just locally, but some that come from out of the area as well. Mm-hmm. We cover Southern California, my team and I, but mainly from Diamond Bar to Los Angeles and everywhere in between. There's several different types of probates, and we're experts at going to court, helping the families. We get involved early on in the stage, not just towards the end.
In another podcast, trainer Joe Ramos talks about what you're doing. Real estate agents that would identify these attorneys, and you've gotten to know them, introduce yourself. Is that how you get going?
Good question. It actually happens that way, but more often than not, it's a referral. It's people that we know that say, we know that you're certified in probate. This family is going to be going through this process. Could you come with us on the next meeting and meet the family? So that's how a lot of it happens. And then I'm introduced to the attorney. Because a lot of times the attorney is brought on board by the family, and the family will say, we have a probate realtor. And they may know other realtors, but they know that I know the process.
Gotcha.
And this is really
okay.
Good because attorneys
So it's the opposite then. You're meeting the attorney through the family then.
Yes.
And then once you establish that relationship, then you're working with that attorney.
That's right.
Like you'd expect a typical referral type scenario.
We become a team. The probate realtor, my company, along with the family, the attorney, CPAs sometimes, assisted living care folks that know that they have to move people out. Sometimes social workers too are involved in the process.
When we do these podcasts and we talk about SRES and we talk about even SysRep, it's the idea if you're going to target the senior market, you're going to build a team. It sounds like you've done that.
That's right.
Or else you may walk into a situation where there's this group of people already helping the client.
That happens. It happens that way as well.
Okay.
We're plugged into the process already. It's not that we don't get families through the attorneys. That happens, but it's more organic and more frequent when we get brought in because of the families.
That's a different approach than what we've talked about in other podcasts, so it's good.
Sure.
So you're brought into this scenario. Tell me a little bit about what happens and why is this probate sale different than typical listing or sale?
Well, the process is different because you have the courts involved. When you have a standard sale, family has the authority, full authority, to go ahead and list a house, sell it, and distribute the money amongst the heirs. When you don't have a trust or you don't have a will or you have someone who has Alzheimer's who doesn't have a family member who could take care of their estate, then the court will appoint a conservator. And that's usually a fiduciary appointed to help the person, moving them to a home, a memory care facility, that sort of thing. So we get involved that way. Now, the process is different with probate because the contracts are different, number one. The timeline is different. On one hand, it can be similar to a standard sale if it's not required to go to court for confirmation. When you go through probate because you don't have a will or a trust, then the court can decide whether or not the person has full authority or not. If it's full authority, that means they can list the house, sign the paperwork, sign the contracts. You can make sure you have certain things in place. And that's what makes it different as well. For example, in a standard sale, you're not worried about a document called letters testamentary or letters of administration. And without going into a lot of details, that's just an example of what's different. There's a new law as of January 2016 that you can use a standard contract if you're listing, but then you have a probate advisory. on the purchase side of that, if someone's buying the house, then there's still a probate contract. And the language is very different. And as a probate realtor, you want to make sure that you understand that language, because if it's not right, the attorney is going to actually start telling you, you have to change the language. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to fly. Mm-hmm. And you really want to get that right, because any delay, especially if court confirmation is required, it's going to delay the process. Okay. It's long enough by itself.
I was going to say, it's a long process anyway.
It's a long process. Probate itself, part of the process involves selling the house, which is usually the largest asset in the estate. However, bank accounts, cars, jewelry, all the other possessions, personal property of that person goes through the process, and that could be a year, 2 years. It could take a long time.
Yeah.
So addressing today, just the sale of the real estate, of course.
Absolutely, sure.
So that process, for example, is going back to your question of why is it different? Not only the contracts, but the timeline. Publications have to be filed by the attorney. Contracts have to be correct. People have to make sure that the buyers are removing their contingencies up front. That's something that has to happen before it goes to court. They are willing, the people who are buying probate properties, that's different. That's a different buyer, because they're willing to, in a court confirmation probate, they're willing to keep their deposit in escrow for 45 days or longer.
For a long period of time.
For a long period of time.
Makes sense, because they know this process is going to take time.
That's right. We know that up front.
In that situation, have you, in a typical way, you've listed the home, and then along comes a buyer, because now there's a deposit check, right?
That's right.
Price has been agreed upon, and have those details, like a typical sale, already been set before it goes to court?
Okay. It's been marketed, you know, properly. You enter it into the MLS, you say that it's a probate property, that commissions are dependent, commissions are 5% set by the court. And we also tell them that court confirmation is required or not, because then they're prepared for that long process.
Uh-huh.
Not all of them actually have to go through court, but they understand that up front. The buyers do.
Now, is there a difference in the buyer for a probate sale? Like, are they typically, they want the home to live in, or is it an investor type buyer?
I've had both ways, because it depends on the property. For example, I had one property, my goodness, it seemed like everybody in Los Angeles wanted this little property. It needed a lot of work. Uh-huh. So that type of house is more attractive to an investor. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you have homes that are, depending on the condition, just like a standard sale, that they're move-in condition and they're marketed for a market value, where it's going to be more of a retail sale, not a wholesale property where it's marketed below list price because of the work. The makeup or the profile of the buyer just depends on the property itself. And then that also leads me to whether or not there's going to be overbids in court if court confirmation is.
How's that work? I've heard a story of this in another podcast. So,
that's exciting.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
I like that one. We need to go to court. I mean, for the sake of the family, it's better if you don't have to go to court, because then, you know, people don't have to wait long time periods of time. But the court process is very interesting. Just think of an open auction in court, and the judge is the one that's deciding.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know,
then you've got to be there if you're representing a buyer in a situation. You got to be ready for a counteroffer type of scenario. Is that right?
And normally I'm representing the seller.
You're the seller. Okay.
And 99% of the time I've got the listing. We have marketed it, got the buyer.
So you're sitting there. You're the seller agent. Mm-hmm. You're in court. You've got a buyer lined up. You've got their deposit check. Everything looks good. Mm-hmm. And then along comes somebody that's going to bid against the buyer. Is that am I hearing that right? Am I understanding that right?
That actually could happen. Uh-huh. I'll tell you one example, Jim. This one is probably my favorite probate story. I listed the property. We went to court. You wait for your court case number to be called. So the attorney's there. Any potential overbidders are there. The buyers are there. The buyers, remember, have had their deposit in escrow for at least 45 days, probably longer. Cases go before you, and you sit there and you wait, and one goes up, and okay, any overbids? No. Okay, done. Move on. My case came up, and half the courtroom stood up.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, where did these people come from? Uh-huh. They were all there to bid on this property. It was a complete fixer. That's where the investors came in. Everyone, it was an overbid. It was an auction going on in court. So the judge set the increments in value and how much the overbid should be. So for example, the judge could say, okay, we're going to take overbids by $5,000. Mm-hmm. So it just went up and up. And I think that one ended up going maybe 60,000, 50,000 or 60 over. A lot of buyers were there. In that case, the original buyer is not too happy, because he could only go to a certain amount of money.
Oh, that's gotta
and
be
his
rough.
Money's been sitting there. Now he's going to get his money back, of course,
but
you know, he's had $80,000 sitting in escrow for about 60 days.
Oh my gosh. And especially if the buyer maybe is a family member, right? You have a scenario where maybe they want to buy. In that case,
not usually.
It's not the case?
No.
Okay.
So not usually. No. We have open houses. Like I said, we market it and we just attract.
So it's really just like a typical listing. If there was a family member that wanted the home, how would that work?
The heirs have to agree upon that.
Okay. It,
just like anything else. I have one right now that's going on where the siblings are three siblings, the sister and brother want to buy out the third sister.
Okay.
Two sisters and a brother. One wants their money, so the other two are going to buy the property. They agree upon the price and the terms and all that good thing. that's okay.
So like, that works out okay then.
That works out, yeah.
Well, Gail, if I'm an agent thinking about adding this to my business plan, I know there's classes. For instance, Joe Ramos in another podcast offers a probate class. It sounds to me like you've got to get trained. This isn't something you're just going to kind of pick up as you go along, right? You got to get the proper training for it.
Absolutely, because, you know, Jim, that's a good point, because the laws change, mm-hmm. and you really have to know what you're doing, because attorneys, they have a lot of cases. They don't have time to train you on, okay, these are the contracts, the language isn't right, and that sort of thing. Right. The other thing that just came out this year, January 2016, that people that are interested in doing probate, and this goes back to your question of being trained, you have to stay up on the laws. Mm-hmm. So as of January 2016, transfer on death deed, we call it TOD,
right.
That actually is a document now in California. We just adopted, it's been in, I think, 25 or 26 other states, but we just got it here, and that means that you can transfer future ownership and avoid probate.
Yeah, in fact, we're doing another podcast from a trust attorney, and I know there's a lot of warning parts to that. It's not as simple as it appears at first. At first, it's like, gee, that's a great idea. You know, that's like a trust light, you know, and real quick and real cheap, but there's potential liabilities for agents and brokers if they get involved in those, right?
Well, there's exposure, of course, but the attorneys that I have spoken with, Jim, actually say that the reason why California, who's usually on the forefront of having new laws, we were very hesitant as a state to adopt this document because we feel that there will be fraud around it.
Exactly.
And that's a lot of preying on seniors. As an SRES, a senior real estate specialist, that concerns me. So I work closely with attorneys to find out what can we do as realtors and brokers to make sure that that doesn't happen and that it's used properly.
Sure. Makes great sense. Gail, appreciate you giving us this overview. If I have an agent or an agent is listening, you'll be on the website. They can get your information. Okay. Agents in the car right now and they want to talk to you. Give me your contact information if you could real quick.
Absolutely. Well, my email address is gail@gailbarnes.com. Real simple, but it's gailebarnes. Then go to my website, gailbarnes.com. Yeah. gailebarnes. Most people think it's G-I-L. And my phone number also, 888-699-8702.
Gail, appreciate you coming on the podcast. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim. You're rocking.